Welcome in to a super special Super Bowl preview. Kevin, it's been a little bit since we've hopped on the mics. A lot of things to talk about. I'm excited for all of it. My team has a new coach. Your team, you probably wish, had a new coach.
No.
How you doing, Kevin?
Never give up on Matt Rhule. No, we hinted at that this episode might be coming, potentially, and here it is, because we always deliver. So,
absolutely.
Excited to hop in. Give you a little playoff recap, talk about already a bunch of coaches moving around, like locking down Kevin O'Connell on the Vikes. And then talk about the Super Bowl a little bit with some nice props, a DFS showdown. And I think that's actually going to be it.
All right, Kevin. Well, let's just jump right into the playoff recap. I actually felt a lot of happiness. A lot of teams that I did not want to advance did not. Let's start off with Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers, most likely, I'm never going to, completely throw it away, but most likely ends his tenure in Green Bay with a classic failure. Once again, they just can't get over the Niners hump. I don't know if that's, Shanahan just out coaching. Green Bay special teams was awful. Is this it for Green Bay?
It might be. There was no sweeter sound than walking into work on Monday morning to just crickets. Oh, man. The Packers faithful that were raring and ready for a deep playoff run were sorely disappointed by Aaron Rodgers putting up 10 points. You have to put up more than 10 points. And if they didn't fail in such tragic fashion again, I would see Aaron Rodgers coming back. But it's the same shit, different year. They lose in tragic fashion, and I think that just ushers them to the door.
39 wins the last 3 years, just absolutely ridiculous. Now, my question to you, Kevin, as a person who now is a fan of a team with a Sean McVay disciple, we've seen Zach Taylor reach Super Bowl with Joe Burrow, Matt LaFleur. Obviously very successful Green Bay. I said 39 wins. Is this an Aaron Rodgers and Joe Burrow thing? Or do you think there's something with the Rams coaching staff that, Green Bay should be fine with Jordan Love and Matt LaFleur?
I don't think they're going to be fine with Jordan Love and Matt LaFleur. Actually, I think the Bengals made it to the Super Bowl in spite of Zach Taylor. I think they could have done better multiple times this season with another guy at not calling the plays, but leading the team. It's going to be, we saw the one game with Jordan Love earlier this year, and it was very ugly. They weren't able to push the ball. They played very safe, and I have a tough time believing that Jordan Love is the answer. Have a tough time believing that Matt Floor is going to conjure up anything wonderful. I think they're a nicely built team. I think they'll still win probably 9 games next year. They'll do just fine, but no longer anything scary walking into the playoffs.
Yeah, I have a hard time. I mean, their defense, obviously, they built that up this year. I think they're going to lose some key guys from there. Because they're in salary cap hell. It's going to help if Rodgers goes elsewhere. But you're staring down the barrel of an offense with, no Davante Adams, most likely, no Aaron Rodgers. I have a strong belief, Kevin, that if they try to franchise tag Davante Adams, say goodbye to any chance Rodgers is there. And we might see, quite the holdout from Davante Adams, kind of similar. Allen Robinson was very unhappy getting franchise tagged. I guess I don't know what it was with Allen Robinson, but obviously didn't play his best ball this year. Davante Adams isn't going to go out there and throw games, but you could see a classic Raiders Moss season where you could just tell he's not trying. Getting paid that money.
Yeah, I have a tough time thinking that the Packers are going to franchise tag him. If you're losing Aaron Rodgers, you probably don't have super high hopes for the season anyway. To franchise tag Devontae Adams, make him unhappy for 1 year is kind of just a loss. Could potentially see a rare sign and trade or a rare tag and trade out of the Packers, but I think those are both slim as well. I honestly think Devontae walks. I think Rodgers walks. Packers spend a little money, bolster up, but move it to a very heavy run game next year.
Yeah, A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones obviously going to be big in fantasy next year. I'm high on A.J. Dillon. I think, like you said, Packers transitioning to a more run-heavy approach. They used A.J. Dillon quite a bit down the stretch, probably regretting that little contract they tossed Aaron Jones' way last year.
Whoops.
Well, another guy who might be walking out the door, as we're talking about Aaron Rodgers, is Jimmy G. You know, great win over the Packers. Couldn't get over the hump and get into the Super Bowl. Jimmy G most likely gone. Any interesting fits out there for Jimmy G? I did think it was quite funny that he said he wanted to go to a winner. What, Jimmy G? You've been to the Super Bowl. You've been to conference championships. What do you want?
I think he knows that bridge is burnt and how ugly he looked. They managed to win games, and people can call him a winner, but he's another guy that I think they won in spite of having Jimmy G at quarterback. To be honest, Carolina's not a bad fit. Carolina's going to be willing to really try any quarterback at this point. I don't know that it's a great quarterback draft, so they will be scavenging whatever's left in the free agency pool. Texans are always an option. Not a lot of great spots.
Some reckless speculation here, Kevin. What if he kind of follows in Tom Brady, his old mentor's footsteps? Tampa Bay is going to be looking for a new quarterback this year. A roster still, I think, ready to win. What do you think about that fit?
It's an interesting call. I think Arians wants to air it out, though, and I don't think Jimmy G is that guy, and I think he knows that. I think there's a better chance that they get Carolina to pay most of Sam Darnold's contract and they pick up him on a low-risk deal. Not a great fit, in my opinion, out in Tampa.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting little carousel. Rodgers potentially could be out there. Russell Wilson recently said at the Pro Bowl that he wants to weigh his options, all his options. So, I mean, you could potentially see Denver needs a new quarterback. The Panthers want to win. Steelers, I think, could be ready to win with a quarterback upgrade. You know, you mentioned Saints could be an option for somebody. You know, a lot of interesting, intriguing quarterback carousel moves. One thing I want to shoot out there with the 49ers, so just want to put this out in the airwaves and in case it could happen. 49ers, clearly a great team, like you said, won in spite of Jimmy G. Everyone knows Kyle Shanahan. Who's his favorite quarterback in the league, Kevin? Who did he have a mourning period when they didn't sign him in 2018?
I'm not recalling. I'm sorry.
Well, John Lynch went on the airwaves in 2018 and said that they were happy with the Jimmy G trade, but there was a mourning period for Kyle Shanahan because they didn't end up signing one Kirk Cousins. Could you see, is there any scenario, give me any hope, percentage chance that a Trey Lance, Kirk Cousins swap happens?
Nothing is impossible. Nothing's a zero probability, but that is about as close as you can get.
So you think the Niners, who are ready to pop, ready to win, Kyle Shanahan kind of on the hot seat if he doesn't, you know, I don't know, he has won a lot. He's not on the hot seat. But, I mean, there's some Niners fans out there that say, when's the Super Bowl coming, Kyle? You think he's going to roll into next year with Trey Lance at the helm, unproven?
You don't trade up. Or you don't pick Trey Lance with the third overall pick and not not roll with him at least a little bit.
You don't pick Josh Rosen number 3 overall and not roll with him.
He was like 10. I don't think there's a shot in hell. And even if they do manage to swing some kind of trade to get rid of Kirk Cousins, they're going to have to eat a bunch of that contract. Nobody's going to just pick that up.
Yeah, it would have to, I think, be a sign and trade with Kirk agreeing to an extension with a new team to lop some of that money off, obviously. But we'll have a lot of offseason quarterback reckless speculation. let's head to a hot button issue this offseason. Bills, Josh Allen, Chiefs, great, probably one of the best playoff games I've seen in a while. Back and forth, great clutch plays. However, Bills don't get a chance in overtime. They lose the coin toss. Josh Allen doesn't get a chance. Chiefs just march right down and score.
Yeah, ouch. This is easily the best case or the best example for why the overtime format has to change in the NFL, especially for the playoffs. So in the regular season, the team that wins the coin toss in overtime wins pretty close to 50% of the time. But since we're on the most recent iteration of the overtime rules, I think 10 out of 11 teams that have won the coin toss in overtime have won in the playoffs. And I think that speaks to, if you have a good offense, you're probably going to make the playoffs. And if you have a good offense, it's a good chance you're going to march down and score a touchdown, or at least get that first field goal to put yourself in a situation where you're very likely to win the game. Can you imagine what would have happened, though, if the Chiefs against the Bengals would have marched down, scored another touchdown, Bengals didn't even get an opportunity to win? The rule would already be changed if that happened. So I'm a little pessimistic that they're going to make a move off of just one game, but I couldn't think of a better example to try to motivate that change than this one.
Well, it was extremely clear and you know, should have been clear from the moment they instituted this rule, which was a long time ago, stupid rule. But you're thinking overtime. Name a player on defense that has their full legs under them at that point. Especially if you're in a shootout like Bills Chiefs, you could tell neither of those defenses were going to stop anything. So is the college overtime rules the best, you know, switch? No, it's not. I mean, that becomes, what was that Texas A&M LSU score, like 72-74, something like crazy like that? That's not the answer, but give the Bills a shot. If they don't score a touchdown, game over. You know, that is, I think, way more interesting, especially in the playoffs where it's going to a winner, not a stupid-ass tie. I think an option is you have to give the other team a chance to score a touchdown at that point. Same rules as college, right, where you're matching. However, you're making the Bills drive the whole field at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't even have to do the kickoff if you don't want to. If you really want to take that part out, then just start out on your own 25 instead of in college, isn't it, the opposing team's 25?
Yeah.
Back them all the way up. Make them run some clock, especially in the playoffs when you're going to determine a winner. Play it out. Give the offenses a chance.
Absolutely. No one would ever sign up for a game where you say, okay, you know, if we go into sudden, you know, if we go into an extra period, if I do well, you're not going to get a chance. No one would sign up for that. I mean, like, oh, well, that sucks based on a coin flip. Whatever. The best thing that happened out of this is that we got to see the Chiefs enter the doorstep of a potentially another Super Bowl. I had a message board that I was on where I went toe to toe with a Chiefs fan. You might have heard him on our airways before, Mr. Greg Rainey. We went toe to toe and I said, it's getting to the point where people are going to get as sick of the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes as people got of Tom Brady and the Patriots. And that point, I never said that Patrick Mahomes is bad. The Chiefs are bad. Never any of that. Patrick Mahomes, number one quarterback in the league, no doubt. Chiefs.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable. I mean, Travis Kelce, best tight end of the league. Tyreek Hill, one of the most, you know, probably the best weapon in the league.
I two say matchup weapon, nightmares.
Absolutely. But it is tiresome to watch a team over and over and over again win because their fans get all cocky and say, oh, there's no way we're going to lose. We're just going to right to the Super Bowl. And for the last few years, they have. But this was perfect. This was perfect, Kevin, because they shot up. They had a nice halftime lead over the Bengals. And then in the second half, Kevin, they had no goddamn pride to finish it out. They just couldn't finish it out. They even get the coin toss in overtime. Like we said, it's almost, you know, game over at that point. They can't do it. Patrick Mahomes throws a pick, which is perfect. Man, I'm just so happy I don't have to hear Chiefs fans, you know, suck their own dicks for the next, you know, 3 weeks. So, you know, this was a perfect scenario for me.
I totally agree. The only team that, you know, if they did turn into absolute dominators that, you know, you wouldn't root against is definitely the Minnesota Timberwolves. But that's another topic for another day. But we love to hate on the Chiefs. Just a little bit, poke the fires a little bit. Could not think of a more poetic ending than Patrick Mahomes throws, all right, a kind of a fluky interception, but an interception. And then ultimately they blow the lead, lose the chance at the Super Bowl, and we get to march into another season wondering if the Chiefs can get back over that hump again.
Well, Kevin, one thing that, you know, I think an interesting conversation that now stems off of this is we can go into the whole, you know, talking head spin cycle of Andy Reid was known as a complete choke artist for his entire career in Philly. And then, you know, couldn't get over the hump until Mahomes in Kansas City. You know, one Super Bowl the last 4 years with Patrick Mahomes, or 3 years, sorry. No, this was his fourth year starting, correct? Fourth year.
Okay. I think, yep.
So one Super Bowl win out of those 4 years. Andy Reid, famously, not a great end game, not a great clutch coach.
Still can't manage the clock.
Yeah, we can still, I mean, the Chiefs are really good, like I said. Patrick Mahomes, best quarterback in the league. But you have to have almost everything go right to win a Super Bowl. Is there a scenario, and I think it's very possible, that the Chiefs don't, you know, they could go back. I could easily see them going back. But the AFC is now stacked with really good dynamic quarterbacks. The Chiefs could potentially not win another Super Bowl with Patrick Mahomes. It's, you know, it's in the realm of possibilities. In the realm of possibilities. Now, last year, I don't think people would say, oh yeah, Patrick Mahomes never, he'll definitely win two or three more. I mean, now it's a little bit of a toss up.
You know, yeah. And especially if Rodgers goes to Denver, there's a chance they don't make the playoffs, to be honest. They get hit with the injury bug a little bit harder than they have been the last couple of years. There's a real chance that it's Justin Herbert and Aaron Rodgers, and throw his name in there, Derek Carr, pushing some losses against the Chiefs and actually not making the playoffs in some years. You have to have everything go right in order to make the Super Bowl. And win the Super Bowl. Andy Reid, he's talked about as an elite coach, but I honestly have doubts if he's in that elite tier. I think Belichick might stand alone in that spot, to be perfectly honest. There's just too many holes with falling flat, not making halftime adjustments. You have a huge halftime lead. Can't hold on. Can't manage the clock after repeatedly over. And how do you not hire a guy to manage the clock for you at that point? It's
like him and Mike McCarthy. I don't like get someone on your goddamn staff to just do it.
Call the timeouts for him.
Yeah.
Call.
You mentioned it, Kevin. I mean, when we're talking about the Chiefs, that division is stacked, and the Chargers are rolling in to next year with $68 million of cap space. Why? Because they only get to pay the, they're not paying their quarterback, who is really good,
not money. Paying their left tackle.
Yes. A lot of so money. Now that the Chargers are entering a potentially, you know, Super Bowl window this next year, they're probably going to go all out, sign some big time names if they can. And like you said, they're going to be a real force in the AFC West, along with the Broncos potentially upgrading at quarterback. You know, like you said, it's not going to be, you know, two wins over the Broncos easily for the Chiefs next year. You know, Chargers are no walk through either. So interesting times for Chiefs fans. I don't feel bad for them at all.
never do. One last thing to hit on here with the playoff recap. I think a little bit of a shock to many people. Tom Brady walks away from the game, ends the illustrious career, and probably takes Gronk with him.
Yeah, it's, you know, Tom Brady ends his career as the leader in almost any meaningful quarterback stats, wins, playoff wins, Super Bowls, passing yards, touchdowns. You know, I think he's going to get caught with all those records by some of these young guns in the AFC. 17th game now. You know, we're going to see some of these records fall, but no one is going to be, you know, be the winner that he was. I hated him, you know, until I had him on my fantasy team this year, and I loved him. But, you know, super fun to watch. Gronk will go down as, you know, best, most dynamic tight end probably ever. Thank you. What did he make the NFL Hall of Fame team, and he was still playing, him and Brady? Just nuts.
Yeah. And any chance of a Brady comeback? Do you think it's out there?
No, I don't. This guy is very calculated, Kevin. You know, I think there's going to be whispers since he goes out on the way that he did. There will be whispers for the next few years of any team, you know, ooh, could they lure Tom Brady away? You know, think he was, you know, he flirted with the Niners. He flirted with Miami. You know, we could see him and some teams trying to flirt, but I don't think anything's going to consummate.
I think that's fair. Speaking of happy trails, I think there's a solid list of 10 teams, maybe even 11 here, that have walked away from their head coaches and brought in new guys. So I'm going to go ahead, list them off. You tell me which ones are the most intriguing. So the Bears brought in Matt Eberflus from the Colts. Denver Broncos bring over Nathaniel Hackett from the Packers. Houston Texans likely to sign Lovie Smith to the to a head coaching deal. Jackson Jaguars bring in Doug Peterson. Raiders bring in Josh McDaniels. Dolphins bring in Mike McDaniel, the young guy from San Francisco. Vikings, of course, Kevin O'Connell. I'm sure you'll have thoughts on that one. And then Saints all but officially have signed Dennis Allen, and the Giants have had Brian Daboll for a while.
Yeah, I think, you know, Doug Peterson, you know, kind of stands out to me, right? Super Bowl winner, what, 3-4 years ago? Hey, can he develop Trevor Lawrence? Everyone kept saying that Trevor Lawrence is some generational talent. I saw him completely flop in the college football playoff multiple times. And then he has a not great rookie season. Obviously, Jacksonville is just a dumpster fire. But, you know, my old buddy Rick Spielman now heading, you know, that front office there. It's going to be interesting times in Jacksonville with Doug Peterson. It's weird to me he took a job like this. I figured he would try to take one of these jobs like the Raiders or Dolphins that would, you know, could win right away. Maybe this was his only option. I know when Rick was still here, he wanted to talk with Doug Peterson for the head coaching vacancy that he thought was going to be the only one. But he walked into the office on firing day and got his ass fired as well. So Doug Peterson definitely, you know, stands out to me. I do have some Kevin O'Connell takes, but I'll let you go first with what's the one big thing stand out.
Touching quickly on Doug Peterson, I'm not a big fan of him as a head coach, but I think that they will run some very interesting stuff. I think the real pain point was he was a little too creative for his own good over at in Philadelphia, and that's what really kind of ran him into the ground so quickly, despite being a Super Bowl winner. Even if the Jaguars aren't good, I think they'll be fun to watch. So I'm looking forward to that.
And I just want to mention, I think a lot of people need to start giving Frank Reich a lot more credit for that Super Bowl than, you know, Doug Peterson. We've seen Frank Reich win a lot of games with the Colts with some really bad quarterback play.
The interesting one for me is the Texans signing or promoting Lovie Smith from defensive coordinator to head coach. Everywhere Lovie Smith has gone, the defenses have instantly gotten better. But I think the best move was to try their damnedest to hold on to him at defensive coordinator and bring in an offensive mind, get that offense figured out. I worry that this is going to be a nosedive and a little bit intentionally by the Texans, just not doing anything to motivate that offense. Would have liked to seen him get a better shot than getting stuck in Houston. I would have liked to seen him catch on elsewhere.
Yeah, this was kind of a bad offseason if you were a defensive coach. Eberflus, Lovie, and then Dennis Allen, the only defensive guys that got hired.
No Leslie Frazier, no Todd Bowles. All guys.
D'Amico Ryans was in the running for some jobs. The Vikings talked to Raheem Morris, who, defensive coordinator. With a lot of these jobs, you know, obviously the Mike McDaniel, Kevin O'Connell standing out as the prime examples of young offensive coaches. Mike McDaniel and Kevin O'Connell have one question that you have to ask about them. How much of the job did they do with their offenses? Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay obviously are the architects, the play callers. What was Kevin O'Connell doing for the Rams? What was Mike McDaniel doing for the Niners? I've obviously dived headfirst into Kevin O'Connell stuff. Sounds like he was running the offensive meetings while Sean McVay was, you know, bouncing around the room. Sounds like he spent a lot of time with Stafford developing plays. One thing that I'm super excited about, and we're Mo and McGee on fantasy, you know, obviously this isn't fantasy heavy episode at the moment, but something that stands out to me for fantasy, Kevin O'Connell, you have to believe that they're going to start doing a lot of Cooper Kupp stuff with Justin Jefferson.
Absolutely.
Getting, you know, what a lot of people have been breaking down is how is Cooper Kupp getting so wide open? Everyone knows he's getting the ball. Well, it's because they stack him. They put him close to the line. They put him in the backfield. They give him free runs, which lining Justin Jefferson up at X receiver, he's going to get press covered. He's going to get someone with his hands on him 3-4 feet in the line of scrimmage. You watch a lot of these Cooper Kupp big plays. He's getting a free run at a defensive back from, you know, from a stack, from the backfield, from, you know, the line where he gets to set his man up. And you've seen it. He's just destroying people. And I think most receivers could destroy defensive backs if you gave them free run. So Justin Jefferson really high on my list for next year in fantasy. I don't think I'm going to be the only one. But, what kind of concepts is Mike McDaniel going to bring from the 49ers? Is he going to run a Kyle Shanahan offense or not? I mean, we just don't know.
Yeah, we just don't know. But I do think it was an intriguing spot. I think Miami will give him options to really institute whatever kind of offense he wants to go with. And if he's the offensive mastermind that they've kind of touted him to be, they're another team that this might unlock a lot more of that offensive potential that some people, myself included, expected out of Miami kind of coming into the season, especially if they can bring back a Will Fuller, if they can bring get some of those guys healthy and put Tua in chances to succeed instead of just
Could we see a Jalen Waddle, Debo Samuel breakout season potentially? You know, a lot of exciting young receivers. One more thing, and I don't know, you might have one of these as well. So you kind of mentioned Lovie Smith, not your, you know, not a preferred hire for the Texans. I think the Bears' choice of Matt Eberflus, when you have a young quarterback, a offense that, you know, has some pieces with a nice young running back, Darnell Mooney certainly intriguing at the wide receiver spot. Why do you go defense when you have a young quarterback that you can hopefully build that relationship with a coach? It just seems strange to me that they went defense there with, you know, a high draft pick quarterback.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think it's a little bit overcorrecting. They tried to bring in an offensive guy with Matt Nagy. That was a disaster. But the Bears have always been, you know, defensive-minded team, no matter who the head coach is. So they kind of just try to go back to the roots, what's worked in the past. And I don't really like the hire either. I would have liked to have seen some a little bit more of an offensive-minded coach come in there to work with Justin Fields and company. Another not ideal hire that I want to throw out there is Dennis Allen for the Saints. He's going to end up going down as a fall man. They are in. We talked about a couple teams being in cap hell. The Saints are in just about as shitty of a cap situation as you can be. He gets promoted from defensive coordinator to head coach to probably, you know, I think win four games next year. I think it's that's why Sean Payton walked away. I think Sean Payton's in that elite tier of head coaches, but he knew exactly where that team was headed, and it's not in a good spot.
Well, it's a perfect setup for the Saints, because I'm guessing a lot of coaches that went in there, they interviewed everybody. They probably said, hey, are you ready to suck for 2 to 3 years? And if I'm a Byron Leftwich or, you know, Eric Bieniemy who are getting my first shot at this, absolutely not. I don't want to suck for years, because you're going to fire my ass. So Dennis Allen, you know, I think probably the Saints weighed their options. Do we go with a young guy who could potentially rally the troops, or do we completely reset the franchise in the next few years and then go get, you know, a Byron Leftwich type to lead us into the future? Sean Payton, just write this down, Kevin, 2022, actually, when this would be 2023 Dallas Cowboys head football coach. Just write that down right now.
I can see that. You can't tell me that they couldn't have brought in Bill O'Brien to sink the ship again. That seemed like the obvious choice, but apparently not. They want one of their own guys to go down with the team, but we'll see.
All right, Kevin. This is Moan McGee on Fantasy, and so we figured we should probably do some fantasy stuff. We went headed over to DraftKings. Hopefully, you know, no free ads, but hopefully maybe someday we get a little DraftKings kickback.
That'd be pretty neat.
Yeah. We headed into DraftKings. We went to their Super Bowl showdown. So we had to draft teams with $50,000. We had to pick a captain, which gets 1.5 times points, and then 5 flex spots. Kevin, how do you want to do this? You want to break it down, captain, flex, or you want to just give us your whole team?
Well, let's just run the team. So when I put together a team, I try to pick a narrative that especially in a showdown where you're just picking from one team, pick a narrative for that game. What do you think is going to happen, and play into that? If you're putting out multiple entries, then I think you can try a couple different narratives. But if you only are putting in one, only putting one for this Mo versus McGee showdown, I'm picking a narrative. And I think that is Joe Burrow will be running his head off from a la Von Miller, Aaron Donald and company. So you're going to see my team be very Rams weighted and not very heavily weighted towards the Bengals. For that reason, I'm going Cooper Kupp as my captain to get those 1.5 times points. That is the biggest salary out there. Burned 17,000 off the bat on him. But this is the Super Bowl. The Rams aren't going to try to get cute with it. They're going to get the ball to the guy that's got them there. The guy that has caught touchdowns despite everybody knowing where exactly the Rams want to go with the ball. Cooper Kupp is going to be my captain. I'm going to follow that up with OBJ and Stafford to complete the stack. I honestly think Cooper Kupp could get 2 touchdowns, but if he doesn't, one of them's going to OBJ. And Stafford's, I think, a lock for 2, if not 3. Fitting that narrative of the Bengals just running around with their heads off. Got the Rams defense in there. Vegas has the over-under at 3.5 sacks for the Rams. I like the over on that, but that's also a really high line for a sack total. So I think that's Vegas kind of pointing us where to go a little bit. And then on the Bengals side, with the Bengals trying to, you know, do anything on offense, get the ball out quick, going with the slot guy and Tyler Boyd. And then for the couple chances that they get into field goal range, but ultimately holds or sacks bring them, you know, a little bit further back and they can't go for it on fourth, give me Evan McPherson, who's been knocked down.
Yeah, he's been incredible. You know, Kevin, I like your narrative. I'm going to raise you a narrative, and I think it might be similar, but I think my thought process is that the Bengals are going to go into halftime with a deficit of more than 10, forcing them into a second half of throwing. So last 3 playoff games, Ja'Marr Chase owns a 22% target share. And, you know, has been the guy for the Bengals. Now, does it scare me a little bit that Jalen Ramsey might be shadowing him a little bit? But this is DraftKings. You got to shoot your shot. He has a 32% air yards share as well. CJ Uzuma is 2nd in target share with 14. And he is iffy to play, I believe. Don't think he's going to play. So that's some targets to be spread around. Now, Kevin, where I tend to believe this more is that I also threw in Tyler Boyd. So, you know, second half of the game, a lot of pass attempts for the Bengals. Get Ja'Marr Chase, get Tyler Boyd in there to complete my Bengals kind of lineup. Threw some Samaje Perine in there. We saw him run in for a nice little, you know, screen and score against the Chiefs. If they're throwing, I think he might be the one that gets to play a little bit more in the second half. Obviously, Joe Mixon, nice player, has some receiving chops as well, but I can see Samaje Perine get some chances, and I had to go cheap because with my Rams stack, I went Cooper Kupp, OBJ. Like you said, OBJ has been an absolute touchdown machine. I'm going to kind of call back to that in my write that downs as well. And I really like Cam Akers in this game. Rams, second half lead, running the ball with Cam Akers, trying to pound the Bengals away. So that's my team. Ja'Marr Chase, captain, OBJ, Tyler Boyd, Cam Akers, Kupp, and Samaje Perine.
Yeah, I really like the Samaje Perine pick, especially if the Bengals are in third and longs. Samaje Perine's that guy. And I love Ja'Marr Chase. I really wanted him in my lineup, but my only fear is if the Bengals are struggling with pass protection, he's going to struggle to get open on the outside, and they're going to have to either adjust and work him in other ways, or he's just going to get locked up by Jalen Ramsey.
Well, Kevin, I suppose we shall see on Super Bowl Sunday whose team gets the glory. You put in here, Kevin, that you have some pretty high expectations for the halftime show. It features Mary J. Blige, Eminem, Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, and Kendrick Lamar. What are you thinking for the halftime show, Kevin?
Holy shit. This is about to be the best halftime show of all time, or I will be sorely disappointed. My expectations probably are too high, but I expect this to be maybe an all-timer. And I think that leads really nicely into one of my write-that-downs. So I'm going to let you throw out any comments on the halftime show, if you have any.
Yeah, no, I'm just excited as well. I think we're going to see some, you know, some awesome collaborations between the five mentioned artists. Obviously, we're going to probably have some hit songs. It's going to be interesting kind of how all five of them get played in at some point. I also want to shout out, you know, hopefully Kendrick Lamar drops like a new album name or a song or something. That'd be really cool if he did that, because he hasn't put out music in a long time. So I'm excited for that. You know, Eminem, obviously, you know, us being, you know, late 20s, grew up with Eminem just being an absolute rock star. So excited to see him out there.
Yeah, it's going to be special. Definitely a lot of personality out there. Everybody wants to hold the mic. But I think that's why I'm going to lead into write that down. Mary J. Blige is going to be the first one out there. I think she's, I wouldn't say the oddball, but when you're talking about collabs that can happen across these different folks, I think she might make an appearance on Stan if that gets worked in there. But I like her to lead it out a little bit softer before it's just all my music. Oh my God, I'm looking forward to it. So I love Family Affairs as first song at plus 400 and Mary J. Blige at plus 200 for first artist. I do think there's a chance they walk out Dr. Dre, just kind of being people person, you know, the producer of these my guys and my gal. But I do really like Family Affairs as the first song.
Yeah, I haven't looked at the song list yet, Kevin. I gotta believe, you know, California Love, Dre, and Tupac is a heavy favorite for first song.
It is the heavy favorite, with Family Affairs is second. But the thing that pulled me away from California Love is it was the trailer, was featured heavily in the trailer for the halftime show. So that gave me pause, and I'm like, Family Affairs, perfect lead in. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, this is, I mean, talking about a shot in the dark, but I'm surprised the odds are, you know, the way they are for Family Affairs being plus 400, because any of the five could shoot out there first, right? Eminem, probably not, because, you know, Detroit guy, not known as a California kid, but yeah, I'm super pumped.
Kevin, let's hear. Really, really good props with the halftime show. What hair color is going to be first featured for Eminem when he walks out? There's some real good ones. Go out there and take a look. But to get into some of the other.
Oh, Kevin, before you say that, when you said that Mary J. Blige and Eminem might do Stan, instant goosebumps. I didn't even think about that. That is amazing.
It would be unreal. Into the game, what most people are going to be watching for. I like throwing a dollar on Troy Reader as Super Bowl MVP at plus 30,000. So put out a dollar, opportunity to win 301. This fits the narrative that I was kind of talking about of the Bengals running for their lives. If he gets two sacks and an interception, and there's not a lot of offensive points, we saw Malcolm Smith win a Super Bowl MVP. I could definitely see Troy Reader getting one if the cards fall for perfectly right. But when you're betting a dollar to win 300, that's exactly what you're hoping for.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, when you're taking a linebacker for MVP, you're a little out there. But this is what makes Super Bowl prop betting fun, because you get these crazy odds, and if you hit, you can go crazy with it. You can even, you know, throw a dollar parlay on that and, you know, some other things. And if it
retire,
and you could retire. where else are you at with props?
Last prop I have here, Van Jefferson over 2.5 receptions. I know he hasn't been as involved in the offense lately, and he's typically a deep shot guy. But I think with game planning and really wanting to lock down OBJ and Cooper Kupp especially, opportunity is going to be there for Van Jefferson. He only has to get three to return, return your money. Give me Van Jefferson over 2.5 receptions.
I like it, Kevin. I mean, this is going to be a shootout for sure. or a really low scoring game, but Jefferson is used pretty regularly. He's out there a lot in their 11 personnel, so I like that call. All right, take a deep breath, Kevin, because I got a list. I got a list of some props that I love. We're going to start out with some, you know, some more standard ones. I like T. Higgins over 69.5 receiving yards. Over the last two playoff games, he has 106 receiving yards, which doesn't sound like a lot. But if it fits my scenario and your scenario where you think the Bengals are going to be in a pass-heavy scheme, they love throwing slants to T. Higgins when they're in desperation mode. I can see a lot of a heavy T. Higgins. Obviously, that's not my favorite bet of all these, but I do like, you know, that it seems like kind of a low number for a team that's going to be having to pass a lot. So I think the over under for Bengals points is 22.5. So we're figuring, you know, at least a couple touchdowns drives. I think T. Higgins was going to be heavily involved in those.
Yeah. And he's a guy that catches the ball at every level of the field. So they have been known to take a couple deep shots with him as well. So if he gets just one of those, you're already 60, 70% of the way there.
I'm kind of hedging my Jamar Chase captaincy pick with the T. Higgins over. Because if Jalen Ramsey shadows one of these guys, it's kind of night-night for either of their chances. But let's head over. I told you I liked Cam Akers in this game. Over 63 rush yards. He had, I believe, 40-something in the first half of the NFC Championship. Kind of got banged up. Rams kind of went into a kind of a pass-heavy approach in the second half. I like Cam Akers. If the Rams are up at halftime, he's probably going to be heavily involved in both of those. I also stick with the Rams in these next two. I went OBJ first touchdown. It's been a touchdown machine, Kevin. You know, this is just a fun bet. It's plus 1,000. So you're talking about a dollar to win 100. Throw that into a parlay with a couple of these, you know, a couple safer bets maybe. OBJ first touchdown. And then I have Stafford over a half interception. This is the Super Bowl, Kevin. Nerves are going to be high for Matthew Stafford. We've seen him have some jittery ass interceptions in big games. I think if I had to say any of these as a lock, I would have Stafford over a half interception.
That is my favorite on your list. As good as Stafford has been throughout his career, his one painstaking point, his one massive flaw has been he likes to just chuck at least a couple times a game. And a lot of times that turns into an interception. So I do like the over half an interception. It seems low to me, to be honest. I think that line should be at one.
Yeah, I pulled all these from FanDuel. So they might have changed since, you know, when I looked these up.
I hope not.
Yeah. Another one, I don't think I've seen this before, but a 2-point conversion attempt, you get plus 160 on yes. If it's you can bet on a successful 2-point conversion for plus 400. I like both of those bets. But, you know, we have two young offensive minds here. Going for two has been a lot more prevalent. At some point, one of these teams might have to go for two. I really like throwing that into a parlay of a 2-point conversion attempt. Yes, for plus 160.
I like that as well, especially when you get into these games that are playoffs, win or go home. You're going to see coaches, I think, shade a little bit on, I need the points. Let's get them now.
I took Bengals total points over 22.5. I don't know. So the Rams defense obviously has a lot of superstars, right? But they are not actually that highly rated in most, you know, advanced statistics. I can see the Bengals getting over that 22.5 point total just because they're going to have to score with the Rams. We could see a kind of a shootout happen at the end of the game if the Bengals can keep it close at all.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of money on this over. I'm sticking to my narrative, which is that they're going to be running all over the place, struggling to move the ball at all. But I've been wrong before, I'll admit it. This definitely could be a shootout. They could blow past that 22.5 by a mile.
Kevin, I'm surprised you didn't have Joe Burrow over 11.5 rushing yards, because that seems, if your narrative is right, I mean, he's going to be scrambling all day, just kind of picking up 2-3 yard gains. That seems like money in the bank.
That's a good call. Put that on my list.
All right. Write it down.
Also, what's Stafford's rushing total? Because I feel like it's always like 2.5 yards. And it's like, yeah, it's, man, that could be high. 2 or 3
just
sneaks.
Just one time, yeah. I think last year I bet Tom Brady over rushing yards and it didn't hit, but so that might have scarred me. Kevin, this is my favorite bet, national anthem bet, and this one is more intriguing than, you know, a lot of them. So we have, I need to get her name right. It's something Guyton. I want to pronounce. Mickey Guyton. I was about to say Michelle Guyton, but good thing I looked it up. Mickey Guyton. The over-under is set at 95, which for you rubes is 1:35. Now, you might be saying to yourself, wow, that's really low. And it is, Kevin. Listen to these stats. The average over the last, since 95, the average anthem, 1:56. Ooh. 1:56. That's the average. 7 of the past 9 anthems have been over 2 minutes. The other two were slightly over 1:49. I think one was 1:49, the other was 1:51. So everything is screaming over, right? Oh, Kevin. Let me switch it up on you. Mickey Guyton sang at this year's National Memorial Day concert.
I love
it. You want to know where her national anthem checked in at? 76 seconds.
Ooh,
which is way, way low.
Get right? to the game.
Yeah, and she also sang, the only recorded of her singing national anthem is from 2015. I think the first little bit cut out, but it was at 81 seconds. So that was, you know, both way under 95. However, Kevin, I'm going all historical data on this. Mickey Guyton is going to give the show of her life and take this baby over 95 seconds, really belt these notes out. You know, 76 seconds, you are speeding through that thing. I think she's really going to take her time, really settle in to LA.
Relish the moment.
Relish the moment. Give us a show. This is just an exciting one because you're sitting there with your phone timer, timing it out from word to word over 95 seconds. I'm going with the history over Mickey Guyton's performances.
So will you be sitting there with the stopwatch, checking the pace, like, well, got the halfway point checked out, see where she's tracking?
I don't know if I'll go that far, but I do have the stopwatch out, and I try to start it right on that first note, you know, and carry it through. You know, it's funny, when I was looking this up, I remembered 2019, Gladys Knight, I believe, had like a something. It was right on the line, and she sang Brave twice. I think she gave it like a short belt, and then she really belted it. They did not count that because she sang an incorrect word, so they did not count the overs. And it was just a mess for sports books. I don't know. You'll have to look up the story. I was kind of reading a little bit about it today, but. Oh, where was it? Gladys Knight sang Brave, which is the last word, 3 different times, causing many to think they won the over. However, most books only counted the beginning of the first Brave.
So they paid out the unders too?
They paid out the under.
Wow.
Most sports books, yeah. So there is some crazy things, like if she goes off the rails and sings the last word a few different times, you know, we could potentially talk about a nuts situation. But Mickey Guyton, over 95 seconds, really relished that Super Bowl moment for herself and take that thing over.
Yeah, I really like these, especially the Super Bowl props, where you can bet on what Gatorade is going to be poured over the winning coach. Is it going to be blue? Is it going to be orange? Is it going to be water? You really get some cool ones out there. Really goofy, some real novel ones, but makes it all the more fun.
Well, I mean, so today I was, just doing my initial prop research, because I think next Saturday I'll make the pilgrimage from Minneapolis down to the border of Iowa, put in all my Super Bowl bets to drive back. And here's how much fun you can have with these. So I was looking at the coin toss, which is a complete, coin toss. It's a 50-50 proposition. However, the Rams are calling it. So I was trying to dive in. Can I see who's calling it for the Rams and what do they call? So I know what they call. Obviously, that doesn't have anything to do with it, but it'd be fun if I could bet like a winning, like who's gonna like is the coin toss gonna be correct? Well, this guy calls tails. I like tails or whatever. Interesting nugget while I was doing all that is the NFC, if they're the loser of the coin toss. So the Rams, if they're the loser of the coin toss, they've gone on to win the last 7 times they've lost the coin toss in the Super Bowl, which is a crazy stat. I don't even know if it's correct. I think I read this on, what is this whack website? Sporting News Atlanta or something. But I'm gonna run with it, and I tried to do all my research that I can. I didn't get anywhere, so I'll probably just bet tails and have some fun.
Yeah, run down to the border after the coin flip and place a heavy bet on the Bengals if the Rams lose the toss.
Absolutely. Well, Kevin, any final Super Bowl words? Who do you think is going to be the winner?
I think the Rams. This should be. I might write that down. But I like the Rams to cover the points as well. Actually, I've been looking at alternative spreads, and I think I like the Rams by 9.5. So give me the Rams in a big one.
Yeah, the story is super nice for Joe Burrow. He's going to be a stud for the next 10 years. However, the Rams had no idea they were going to get this far. I just don't think the team is built the way they want it to be a Super Bowl champion. The Rams clearly put all their eggs into this year. The Rams just seem more ready to win a Super Bowl. Is there a version of this game where I see the Bengals winning? Yes, but that version is a really close grind out win. Like you said, the Rams just have, a lot of firepower on offense and defense that can kind of put this game away easily if they want to.
Yeah, can the Bengals win? Absolutely, but I think their path to victory is a lot tougher and a lot more narrow than what the Rams can.
Absolutely, folks. Well, that is Moan McGee on the NFL this week, I guess. But generally, Moan McGee on fantasy. We are so excited for the Super Bowl. We are so excited for this offseason. We kind of just touched on with the coaches, quarterbacks that are going to be switching spots. We're going to give some free agency breakdowns. We're going to give some draft breakdowns,
Bunch of top tens all
all in the
day.
name of fantasy. So once again, we kind of mentioned this the last time we talked, but episodes are going to be a little less frequent, but maybe more hard hitting as we try to, Kevin, I already said this. 2022 is the year of Moan McGee on fantasy. I almost said TKD, which is our old version. But it's going to jump up big time. We're going to surprise some people.
Absolutely. And I got to tell you, I don't know if you can hear it in my voice, but it's quickly disappearing. So before the next episode, I got to get into some vocal exercises or something. I'm clearly out of practice. I got to get back into the training and be ready to go for a mega off season.
Yeah, you just gotta, whenever the wife is around, you just gotta start spitting fantasy facts and just kind of repetitions,
Environment.
Kevin. Repetitions, yeah. All right, folks, that's Moan McGee on Fantasy. See ya.
See you.